Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Let's talk about something that certainly didn't speak to my soul, which was the G20. I really couldn't even understand what the fuss was about. To me, the minute everybody is lauding climate, our fight against climate change, it really, and I'm not commenting on my thoughts on climate change, it just means that it's such a safe thing because there's no, who's the enemy? Thunder. It's just so easy to do. And then I read an article, or a column, written by Tony Leon, and I thought that really did capture a lot of what I was feeling around it. Leon has been one of South Africa's most outspoken public intellectuals and former political leader. In his latest column, he argues that the recent G20 summit, lauded by some as historic and a diplomatic triumph, may actually amount to little more than diplomatic theater. Thank you for joining us this morning. In your piece, you call the G20 outcome diplomatic theater, as I've just said. What defines this? What is diplomatic theater, and why did you suggest that this might be what it is?
Morning, Howard, and to all the listeners at Chai. Yeah. Well, first of all, let's just go back to last weekend when this happened. I was quite staggered by the hype and the hyperbole of a lot of the media commentary here, on the news websites, claiming this is some sort of, diplomatic breakthrough. And I thought, well, hang on, what is a diplomatic breakthrough? And I mentioned two in my column, but there are many. Well, no, actually, they're quite rare. But, obviously, Kissinger going to Peking, as it was called in 1971, well, that really did change the world. We live in the consequences now. 6 years later, Anwar Sadat goes to Jerusalem on that historic flight and addresses the Knesset and inaugurates a peace treaty between two warring countries, Egypt and Israel, which endures despite everything to this day. Those are diplomatic triumphs and breakthroughs. They're rare and they're consequential, and they reverberate over decades, half a century in the case of China. So when you see what really is a political conference of international summiteers, and then describe it in this really extravagant language, I think, hang on, let's just get back to planet Earth and reality here. That is not to say that, and I did say, let's pocket the winds, that there aren't some advantages. I mean, if you live in Joburg as you do, Howard, the streets, at least on the route between Sandt and Nasrec, got cleaned up. Potholes got filled. The Johannesburg City Council proved it's not entirely useless. So that's probably good. And look, from Ramaphosa's point of view, president, he performs well on international stages. And a lot of the copy, although it had very little to do with the content of the G20, goes to the question of what these summits achieve. There was a lot of international attention, not because of the G20, but because there was a meeting between the Merz of Germany, Starmer of Britain, and Macron of France about this appalling, in my view, peace deal inked by Steve Witkoff for Ukraine, or Ukraine. Pushback by Europe, to the extent there has been a pushback, happened because the three leaders were in Johannesburg. So, as a venue, it was probably useful, and it's useful to get a lot of world leaders into one place. But I think beyond that, in terms of actual achievement, in terms of objective reality, not much to say. I do something like 100 points over 35 pages, and I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with any of this. It's nice to have.
Yeah, well, but that's what I was thinking. It's safe. Climate change, our war against climate change, is all very noble and probably relevant, but it really is nothing. It certainly, as you've mentioned, no massive breakthrough. I just want to focus for a moment on a comment you said early on, which is probably one of the reasons that you were motivated to write this column, which is bring some balance to it. It was deeply disturbing to me following our local media, that the psycho-fantish praise of Ramaphosa and this massive success that it was, there was no balance. There were no real questions being asked. There was no one. It was almost as though it was lording the Springboks, and not a corrupt ANC government that has brought the country to its knees.
No, absolutely. Look, Howard, since I'm speaking to you on High FM, people have an appreciation for biblical stories. So let's go back to the Bible. David and Goliath. So in a sense, the position or the depiction was David and Trump as Goliath, this lumbering sort of bullying giant, and Ramaphosa corralled, leaders of the other world, to stand up and to defy the giant. Okay, well, yes, I didn't think Trump's boycott and performance around the G20 advanced world peace or
absolutely not
for international relations, and the fact that the other countries, some of great significance beyond us, were prepared to stand around and make common cause and say we believe in multilateralism. That's great. But everything has a consequence. And now we live with a consequence. It's very nice to give the middle finger to a bullying, Trump. Mm. But now pushing back. And, you've got to say, when you weigh everything and when you weigh the odds and you put it in the balance, say, well, was it actually worth it to go and poke the bear, given what might be coming our way soon? Maybe not. I don't know. But, I'm all for multilateralism. I'm all for a rules-based international order. I'm all for consistent application thereof. Who is not? But I think, you've got to just keep a sense of proportion and a decent perspective. And that seemed to me over the weekend, as I allude to my column, as you've mentioned now, almost entirely missing in the local commentary.
The fact as well you spoke about a middle finger to Donald Trump. To some extent, I feel there's a middle finger was shown to residents of the city of Johannesburg, because there was a very, very clear message here that we are concerned about our image externally, but we really don't give a hoot about the conditions under which you live for 365 days of a year. For one weekend, we're going to beautify the route to make sure that looks okay. It's almost how I imagine North Korea, where they take tourists. It'll look fairly reasonable, but behind those scenes where you're not allowed to go, there is real suffering.
It's called the Potemkin Village, where you dress things up on the route where the dignitaries are coming, but the backstory is pretty dire and dismal. Some people got very excited in the same column you quoted, based on this interview, Howard, when I said, well, listen, just remember, after you've drunk all the Kool-Aid, that all politics is local. And wham, bam, on Wednesday, three by-elections, municipal by-elections are held, or they have six, and the ANC manages to lose three seats.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't follow that. That says everything, doesn't it?
There's no bounce from this in terms of domestic politics. And I can almost guarantee you, unless the Johannesburg City Council suddenly, turns its back on the habits of recent lifetime, that next year, whenever it is, the local election, very few people in Joburg are going to go and vote ANC because there was a successful G20 weekend in November. That ain't going to happen.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is absolutely, absolutely right. That is unfortunately where we do need to leave it. It is 8:30, actually 8:31. Tony Leon, thank you as always, and thank you for being that critical voice of reason in an environment that seems not to be too bothered by critical thought.